The continuing bloodshed and tragedy in Afghanistan has Americans questioning what our leaders are telling us and whether it's true. This is not just an issue for this White House. This goes back two decades. In April 2002, President George W. Bush spoke at the Virginia Military Institute, and he warned that insurgents would try to undermine any peace and progress the U.S. achieved in Afghanistan.
We know this from not only intelligence, but from the history of military conflict in Afghanistan. It's been one of initial success, followed by long years of floundering and ultimate failure. We're not going to repeat that mistake.
Not going to repeat the mistake. Yet for all of the positive spin, there is well-documented doubt and confusion behind the curtain. Craig Whitlock has uncovered much of that documenting. He's investigative reporter at The Washington Post, and his new book is The Afghanistan Papers, A Secret History of the War. Craig, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thanks very much for having me.
It's great to have you. And you write about some very basic questions of war, for which the U.S. government and the U.S. military has a public answer, and then some private answers that sound quite different. So let me start by asking you the basic question of who is the enemy, what's their motivation? What'd you learn?
Well, that's such an obvious question, as you point out, and yet this is something the U.S. government has been struggling with really since the very initial months of the war. I think everybody understood in America why we went to war in Afghanistan in 2001 at first. It was to defend the country against a repeat of the September 11th attacks.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And as George Bush had said, we're going after al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was behind those attacks. And we're going after bin Laden, Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan and other members of his group. And that was pretty successful part of the mission. Within 6 months, by early 2002, pretty much all of al-Qaeda's leadership had been killed, captured, or had fled Afghanistan. So at that point, the enemy was pretty amorphous. So, you know, that's where things started to go awry.
And the Pentagon, at the time under Donald Rumsfeld, does some of your reporting suggest that it was a very unclear question to them at that point?
Rumsfeld and Bush and others, Vice President Cheney would talk about we're going after the terrorists, in which they were lumping together the Taliban and al-Qaeda and other insurgent groups. But in these memos we obtained for the Afghanistan papers, which Rumsfeld had written or other correspondents within the government, it was remarkable the degree to which they were struggling to figure out who the enemy was. The shorthand for them was the bad guys. For instance, Rumsfeld wrote a memo to his intelligence chiefs a year or two into the war in which he said, I have no visibility into who the bad guys are in Afghanistan. And frankly, that wasn't something we ever sorted out over the last two decades.
Now, on the question of bad guys and I guess how the quote bad guys were created in the first place, I want to play you some audio from one of the oral interviews that you write about in your book. This is Foreign Service Officer Todd Greentree in an oral history interview with the Association for Diplomatic Studies and Training on the Taliban insurgency.
Our insistence on hunting them down as if they were all criminals was what provoked the rise of the insurgency more than anything else.
We hear Todd Greentree. Audio's not that great, but he's talking about the U.S. hunting down the Taliban provoked the insurgency. So what is that? Tell us about how much the U.S. military kind of knew about the enemy.
Greentree goes on in his oral history interview to say that we sort of violated the Afghan way of war, that over the centuries, Afghanistan has been overrun by foreign occupiers. They've also had civil wars where you have commanders from different parts of the country fighting each other, but they know how to switch sides and change allegiances. And so that's the way you sort of end a conflict in Afghanistan, is you have some kind of reconciliation. But the United States, you know, didn't do that. It had thought it had defeated the Taliban back in 2002. Hmm. And rather than allow for some sort of reconciliation for a way to politically end the fighting, we kept creating this bigger and bigger list of bad guys, which in turn just made the list get longer and longer.
Yeah. And this, of course, touches on the question of whether the U.S. was winning, as it were. I want to play some audio now from Michael Flynn, Lieutenant General at high levels of intelligence throughout the Afghan war, in a 2015 interview to U.S. auditors of the war in Afghanistan. This is what he said.
But I'm telling you, this is from 2002 until today. Ambassadors, you know, down at the local level, everybody did a great job. We're all doing a great job. Really? So if we're doing such a great job, why does it feel like we're losing?
You've uncovered these interviews. What's revealing here?
Well, Flynn was head of military intelligence for NATO and the United States in Afghanistan. He served many tours there. And before he got involved in politics and became known as a political extremist, you know, he was well respected in the military for his intelligence assessments. Mm. And his point here is that because we kept sending in new units every year, you know, troops would rotate in for 9 or 12 months at a time. Same with diplomats at the U.S. Embassy. And he's really getting to the question of human nature here, that particularly in the military, nobody wants to admit they didn't accomplish the mission, right? And
sure.
Part of that's the can-do spirit of the military, but it's also this, you know, unwillingness to admit that the situation was unfixable or that you failed. You don't want to take responsibility for failure on your watch or even to question the mission. The instinct is always to say you succeeded.
On the Afghan army, your book goes into a lot of the development and the apparent problems with this. Let's listen to a bit of audio from Robert Gates. He was defense secretary under Bush and then Obama. He spoke to the University of Virginia as well back in 2013.
It goes to my view of the whole campaign in Afghanistan, which was our unwillingness to make Afghans our real partners in this, that we were going to run the show. And whether it was aid or military strategy, we told the Afghans what we were going to do. We didn't ask them what they needed.
So, Craig, how does this square with the public messaging about the U.S. helping, wanting to partner with the local Afghan army?
Well, of course, it doesn't square with it. And we would hear that year after year, the slogan that the Pentagon put out was, we're shoulder to shoulder with the Afghans in the field. We're training them, we're mentoring them, we're patrolling with them. But the reality on the ground was that, as Secretary Gates points out, we sort of dictated the terms of what they were supposed to do and expected the Afghans to follow along. Now, part of that was hubris on the part of U.S. officials that we thought we knew best, even though we really didn't understand Afghanistan that well. But underlying all that was this sort of distrust of our Afghan partners. You see that in a lot of oral history interviews with U.S. troops who were serving as trainers or mentors. They just didn't think the Afghans were up to the job. The Afghan army recruits couldn't read. They couldn't shoot straight. They deserted often. And so this is a very, very difficult task to train an Afghan army that was competent. And frankly, the Americans didn't, at the field level, didn't have much confidence that this was going to work. But in public, the American generals kept reassuring the public that everything was going great. So there's this extreme disconnect between what the American people were being told and what military officials thought behind the scenes.
Now, you mentioned Americans who were on the ground in Afghanistan. On the question of understanding the local terrain, I want to play a little audio of Foreign Service Officer Michael Batrinko. This is in his oral history interview with the Association for Diplomatic Studies and Training.
The CIA was a zero. They were very good about passing out big bags of money, new SUVs. They thought that carrying a gun, growing a beard, and wearing a bandana around your hair qualified you as an expert. It doesn't.
Here he is, Matrinko, talking about CIA officers in the area who were not qualified for what they were supposed to do on the ground there. Does this, Craig, go to the fundamental question of how well did we understand the place?
Yes, and the fact is we didn't understand the place very well at all. Now, Michael Matrinko is a Foreign Service officer who was a rare bird because he spoke Dari, one of the Afghan national languages. And he was pretty scathing in his assessment of anybody else in the U.S. government, but particularly the CIA. And as he pointed out, you know, the CIA sort of thought they understood Afghanistan and would come in beards and dress like the locals and hand out bags of cash to warlords to try and get them on their side. But Matrinko said whenever he would talk with Afghan elders in their native language, they would sort of laugh at how blind the Americans were in their understanding of Afghanistan. And again, this is something we see throughout the war. There was an interview we obtained with General Douglas Lute, who was the war czar for both Bush and Obama. And he said, we didn't have the foggiest idea of what we were doing. We were devoid of a fundamental understanding of Afghanistan. And that's something you hear again and again, that even though we were there for 20 years, we never really understood the place. And this was just an enormous reason why the war failed.
Yeah, that's Craig Whitlock, investigative reporter at The Washington Post. And his new book is The Afghanistan Papers, A Secret History of the War. Craig, thanks again for taking the time.
You bet, Scott. Thank you.
And you can read an excerpt of his book at hereandnow.org.